first question is from Orest Welkadel from Canaccord Adams. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just a couple of questions. I was wondering if you could provide us some details on the floor prices that are that you're getting, I guess, from the OPA at Bruce. Specifically, you know, what price that would kick in.
Okay, remember that those have been in place for quite a number of years now, and I'll turn to Kim for the detail.
Sure. Orest, the contract under which those came about was from 2005. It started out at $45 a megawatt hour, adjusted annually by inflation. The number right now is $48.76 per megawatt hour.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from Raymond Goldie from Salmon & Partners. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you. I noticed your increased guidance for sales of uranium this year, and wondered if you could give us a little flavor of that. Why do you think people are coming to you to buy rather than buying from other suppliers?
George, go ahead.
Well, Ray, they're not just buying from us. You know, volume year-to-date in the spot market is some 33 million pounds. You know, as you can see by our guidance, I think our range is up roughly 2 million pounds. So there's lots of other places for them to get uranium.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Newcrest. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I'll follow on from Ray's question. So where is all this demand coming from, George? Who's doing all the buying?
Well, you know, the estimates are that about half of it is coming from utilities, and you know, then you have traders, brokers, well, traders really, I guess, for about a third, and the remaining one-sixth would be producers, including ourselves.
Okay. So the utilities that are buying seem to be in fairly large volume. Are they North American, Chinese, Korean? Where are they coming from?
You know, it's fairly widespread, but it's absolutely true that, as an example, China has been a very significant buyer in the spot market this year. I would expect the single largest buyer would have been China.
Okay. Any volume estimate there, George?
I don't think we're probably too far off, you know, 8 million pounds or so.
And what does it look? Do you have a sense on how far they're going to push this in terms of the volume they're going to buy this year and next year?
No, I don't.
Okay. If I can, one follow-on question for you. The Cigar Lake, you sound a little more optimistic, and in the press release you note that you've applied for a four-year extension to the construction license and hope that you can do everything you want to do within that time frame. Does that suggest you believe by 2013 you can get Cigar Lake into production?
Greg, what is, you see the intersection between the need to give the regulator defined terms, so because they demand a defined term for the license. So we tried to give an outside date. We're not trying to change the earlier guidance we've given. We still need to get the mine dewatered, get underground, look around before we can, with any confidence, relate to you and others what the time schedule at Cigar Lake's going to be. So don't read anything into the 4 years other than that's kind of the outside limit that we gave to the regulator.
I think that jives with where most people sit and where they think Cigar Lake can come online around 2013. So I think it's a relatively positive statement.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Yep. Thank you. The next question is from John Redstone from Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Given your earlier comments about organic growth going forward, I wondered if you could give us a bit of an update on where Kintyre fits into all that. I mean, it's been quite some time since you purchased this project. What is the status?
Briefly, and then I'll turn either to George or Tim. They both have the input into this thing, but, you know, we've been working with the Western Australian government, which obviously had changed, became pro-uranium mining. We got to get the regulatory structure in place. We've been moving forward with reestablishing the infrastructure, camp facilities, road network, working with the Aboriginal groups down there to make sure that they're plugged in and supportive, which they are. So we'll begin confirmatory drilling in the next little while. That's going to go on. And while at the same time we begin to do the pre-feasibility work, environmental work, environmental permitting that needs to be done. So we're looking now over the next couple of years to get all that done, John, so that we can begin to make decisions as to where Kintyre would fit in the organic production profile. I don't know whether either one is...
I have nothing to add to that.
Nor do I. Yeah.
But there's no firm... when would you expect to maybe go to full feasibility on that project? Let me ask you the question that way.
I think once we have the confirmatory drilling done and we understand as best we can the nature of the ore body and its potential, then we'd move right to that stage. Assuming it's positive, huh?
So you'd be looking around 2011, perhaps, for that?
I think that's a fair guess.
Okay.
Got a lot of work to do between now and then, but yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Borden Putnam from Mion Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning and thanks. Tim, I hear you're on the line. I'd like to ask you a question about Cigar Lake, if I could. The diagram that you guys have provided today only shows one inflatable bag for the area of the inflow, and in February you talked about using two. Can you tell us a little more about what you know about that fissure and what's changed your mind as far as the amount of cement you need to put into that inflow area? Thanks.
Thanks, Borden. We have had a bit of a change of strategy since the last call. In fact, we are on that 420 level going to use just one of those bags to provide the bulkhead, and we're going to put it right by shaft number one. The change has been that we've decided to backfill completely that 420 level. We want to take that right out of play. That fissure, as you know, is right at the corner where the drift turns north. And so what we did over the past couple months is we've drilled some extra holes from surface right to the end of that 420 level. We've drilled three extra holes, and we've started, in fact, we've poured about a little over 1,000 cubic meters of concrete down in the back end, the north end of that 420 level. We're going to plug the entire drift. So that the back end of that is already filled with concrete. We're just getting to the point now where we're going to put the bag down. That'll take us some weeks to do and get that in place, and then start by putting that bag, that bulkhead, if you like, into place, and then we'll pour in between that bulkhead and where the other concrete is in.
Oh, good. That's very helpful. Thanks for the detail. On the Key Lake and MacArthur River, looking back, you've not had a quarter where the planned mill maintenance caused this low of a production level. The only one that I found was close was third quarter last year, and that one seemed to be that low level of production from Key Lake seemed to be exacerbated by some difficulty in restarting equipment that was shut down during the mill maintenance. And I wonder, could you give some additional color on what was involved in this mill maintenance period, and also, if you could, how the remediation is going for the environmental issues you have there at Key Lake? Thanks.
So the difference this year, Borden, you're right, is that we were quite happy about it, is that we took the mill shutdown in the middle of spring or summer, May, rather than in December or at the end of the year as we often do, which really caused a lot of restart problems when you start trying to start up in January and the temperature is quite low. The mill shutdown and the maintenance was pretty routine maintenance, nothing too special that we did. The restart, a few glitches on restart, really not too much. Some of the production issues we've had have had to do more with some power bumps, lightning strikes that we've had up in the north, which is typical for us in the spring. Our numbers are close. We're not concerned. We're still on track to make our production target for this year. So things are going quite well at Key Lake this year.
Okay, good. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. The next question is from Ian Howitt from National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I'm just looking for some more clarity on the whole Bruce Power and the agreement with getting paid above the spot price. Is that for every megawatt of power produced out of Bruce Power, or is it only the material you're delivering into, or the power you're delivering into spot sales?
Okay. Yeah, Ian, the way to look at Bruce is that the full output from the four B reactors is sold into the Ontario grid and all of that output receives the $48.76 per megawatt hour.
Okay. And the wording in the release implies it's for this year only now, and that it's not going to continue after this year?
No, no. What happens with that is the there's a settle up or a true up mechanism built into this. These payments, the difference between the floor price and spot, payments are made each month by the OPA to Bruce. What happens at year end is we'll go through and instead of doing a monthly, we will look back at the annual average, the difference between the floor price and the annual average spot price, and depending on how that math works, Bruce may be in a position of being required to refund money to the OPA, in this example, January 2010.
Okay, now, so next year we have a, you know, good market and the spot price goes to, you know, 100. Do you owe them money back or is that taken out of the deal?
No, that is the difference. What happens now is we come to January 2010, we will do the one calculation based on the as I said, the average price for the year, 2009. It's a one-time calculation. Any amounts not repaid then, the calculation is over with. There's no obligation going forward.
Okay, so it just starts again next year and just keeps going forward like that?
Yeah, 1 year at a time.
That's the difference, Ian. It used to be a cumulative calculation, but the reality is, given the demand destruction, Bruce is not expecting the situation that you described materializing in 2010.
Okay, and if one more on the refurbishment, when is sort of the expiry for each of the four reactors? Like when do they have to be refurbished or?
For the B units, still being looked at every time there's an outage, but toward the latter half of the next decade is when the units would be coming up for the refurbishment, and that stretches out between, say, 2015 and 2020. It's obviously dependent upon how well they perform over the next several years, but toward the end of the next decade.
All right. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The next question is from Christina Gavis from Prince Albert Daily. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Good morning. I just wanted to ask you about about the Cigar Lake remedial that's going on there. You're saying that you expect to have the work done by the end of 2009, but I also know that this is a mine you've been running into problems with. Do you think that you guys are free and clear of the problems as you're going forward with this project?
I think we have, Christina, an increasing confidence that we're moving forward on the right path here. What we say is that by the end of the year, we should be in a position of then commencing the dewatering of the mine. And I think we have pretty good confidence in that. Then that'll allow us to get underground and then understand what the condition of the underground is. At that point in time, we can be a lot more confident in terms of what schedules will be, and we've said to everybody we'll relate that once we have that understanding, and that's going to take a little while, obviously. But hopefully we'll be in a position to dewater by the end of the year.
Sorry, just as a follow-up question to that, you said that you still have to go underground and see the condition. Do you have you had any preliminary looks under there or anything? Like, do you have an idea of what to expect?
Not really. We haven't been able to put anybody down there because it's flooded.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Trish Saywell from the Northern Miner. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Yes, I believe Mr. Grandy visited India earlier this year, and I'm wondering what his view is on when Canada may actually sign the Civilian Nuclear Cooperation Agreement with India and why it's taking so long. I mean, the U.S. signed its agreement about a year ago, and if I'm not mistaken, Russia and France already have agreements in place. And does he think that the delay has hurt Canadian companies? And if an agreement does get signed, I mean, how do you see your business unfolding with Indian buyers?
It's true. I was in India earlier in the year. I've been there a number of times. And I'd say both governments, both India and Canada, are working hard on advancing the nuclear cooperation agreement. These things tend to take quite a while. Obviously, we're urging that everybody pay attention and move it along as quickly as they can. And I truly believe that the governments are putting a lot of effort into getting it done. Russia and France do have agreements in place. The U.S. has an agreement in place, but in the U.S. there's still more to be done. They've still got to do a supplementary agreement before trade can take place between the U.S. and India. So Canada is moving its NCA somewhat in parallel. They're not tied together.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat in parallel with what's going on in the rest of the world, and obviously addressing concerns that India and Canada have in their particular bilateral relations. So, yeah, we're anxious and ready to move forward just as soon as that's finished. And you know, we think it'll be done in a reasonably short period of time.
But how will it affect? I mean, in terms of your business there, are you looking at? Do you have any sort of ballpark estimates on who you might be selling to? Or?
Well, it's a government-owned corporation, so it'll be a state-owned enterprise that we'll be dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got a lot of contacts, a lot of relationships that we've built up over the years, so I'm quite confident that because India has a nuclear program that is somewhat based on the CANDU technology.
Mm-hmm.
I think there'll be a lot of opportunities for Cameco and India to mutually cooperate.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from George Topping from Blackmont Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Jerry, I'm interested in the Inkai production. The full year forecast is 0.9 million pounds for the full year, but in the first half, only 0.2 has been achieved. Just wondering if you know what's going to change in the back half to achieve that.
George, it's Tim Gitzel. In fact, our production from the Inkai well fields has been going quite well this year. What we report in our quarter is the pounds in the can, if you like. Right now, our main processing plant is up and running. We've produced from the back end the first cans of uranium, so that's starting to come online. What we've been doing is been sending the eluate out for final processing at some other Kazakh facilities, and we only count production when it's in the can for purposes of our quarterly reporting. So that's the difference in eluate. We've got considerably more production than we've reported in the can, so you'll see our numbers go up as the year goes on.
So you could look at it as in-circuit inventory in some respects, but it might be might be in-circuit in a number of different facilities, waiting for our own plant to get up and running, which it is now.
Are you able to give us a breakout or some idea of the breakout of the source of uranium between the sales of 35 million? And production of 20 million. How much?
Yeah, you're talking about the difference, George, between
yes.
the two numbers.
Yes.
Yeah, well, HEU would be a predominant contributor, as well as some recycled product, and then just opportunistic purchases in the market. By and large, I think would be the. But HEU, that's been a consistent source for a number of years. And by HEU, you understand I'm talking about the Russian highly enriched uranium. Sorry, I'm using acronyms.
Yeah.
I
have that. I have that in the model. I was more interested in that which is over and above the HEU agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So is it 50-50 between trading and recycling, or
George?
Beyond HEU, that we did have in place, or we do have in place. 2009, another long-term agreement where we were buying material out of from a European enricher, and the rest of it is simply opportunistic spot market purchases.
Yes. Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Also, was interested in whether you're seeing sovereign stockpiling by India and China, and particularly the latter has been obviously bringing in importing an awful lot of other metals. Are you seeing the same? Surge beyond that which they're using in China and indeed India, suggesting that there's sovereign stockpiling going on?
I don't see that much in respect of India. In respect of China, I think there is a bit more of that going on. But, you know, keep in mind, as Jerry noted in his remarks, they've got 13 reactors under construction. You know, so the initial cores for those reactors require them to buy a whole lot of uranium, stockpile a whole bunch of uranium that they can begin enriching and then fabricating into fuel to get those reactors up and running. So, you know, the stockpile is there for a very specific reason, and that is to feed those reactors under construction.
I see. Okay, but not so much from India yet.
Yes, I don't think we don't see as much from India.
Good. All right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from Raymond Goldie from Salmon & Partners. Please go ahead.
Good morning again, and follow up to Mr. Howitt's question on Bruce Power. Noting that you've changed the guidance from 3 months ago, looking for this year declining revenues from Bruce Power to now looking for increasing revenues, I wonder what you know now that you didn't know 3 months ago. And a related question is wondering how long that floor price will be in effect, how many years in the future?
Okay, well, reverse order, Ray. The floor price mechanism lasts for the life of our contract, the Bruce Power contract with UOPA, which goes to, I believe, roughly 2020. So that's what's in the contract right now. Quarter one versus quarter two, we noted in quarter one that these floor price payments were being made, but they were not being reported as revenue. At that point in time, our partners and Bruce had expected we're not sure where the market in Ontario was going, and we're expecting that those amounts would have to be repaid. The market in the second quarter in Ontario, generation market, did go through some pretty significant deterioration. We now do not expect those amounts to be repaid, and that's the reason for reporting the amounts in revenue.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The next question is from Duncan McKean from Macquarie Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks, gentlemen. You've indicated your intent to file the shelf prospectus, and I'm wondering if you're going to look at refinancing some debt. Which components of your debt may you look to refinance?
Well, yeah, Duncan. When we made the acquisitions last year, our standard practice would have been to term out that debt anyway. So when you ask which components, we have a fair amount of short-term commercial paper and such that's what we will be looking at to follow through what we didn't put in place last fall.
Okay. Do you expect to come out of this with more available debt capacity then?
I'm not quite sure your question in the sense that if you mean, you know, the amount of capacity that's driven is certainly by driven by your credit perspective and what lenders are prepared to lend to you. I don't think that number will change in any way.
Okay.
What we're doing here, this is really in an old vernacular, this is debt for debt. We're just extending the term on some existing debt.
Okay. How long are you looking to extend the debt out for this time around?
That will depend on what the market circumstances are when we come to the market.
Okay. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you. The next question is from Simon Tonkin from Thomas Weisel. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. So given the maintenance shutdown at Key Lake, what do you think the distribution of production will be in Q3 and Q4?
Well, we'll be producing at our regular rate. Now we're back up. We're somewhere between 1.5 million and 2 million pounds a month. So just normal operations so that we hit our 18.7 limit by year end.
Okay, so basically by the end of the year, you guys will be producing 18.7 million pounds from MacArthur and for the next few years?
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The next question is from Den Elias from Stern Agri. Please go ahead.
Thank you. If we could just switch to gold for a minute, I've noticed over the last few years, the spread of the difference between what you produce and what you sell is pretty narrow. Sometimes you sell a little less, sometimes a little more. And given that you have revised your production down, and if, even if we look at the bottom end of that range, 680,000 ounces, it's still considerable. It means there's an additional 475,000 ounces that you're going to produce in the back half of the year in the last 6 months. That is fairly sizable. And do you think the amount sold is going to be, with the same spread that it's been historically?
Okay, so Jen, let me try that one for you. It's Kim. Two parts. First of all, the spread, really, it's just in-circuit inventory, and when it comes out, there's no more to it than that, and yes, that we do expect those numbers to stay tight as they have historically. As to the back-end loading of production, well, yes, we do believe that will be achieved. It is a repetition of the same profile that we had and delivered upon in 2008, just how they're getting at the ore in the pit. So, no, we're comfortable on both of those.
Okay, and if we could just switch to fuel services. I don't know if I missed this, but did you disclose the average realized price for the second quarter?
Then no, we do not.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Orest Walkadel from Canaccord Adams. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a question for Kim. I'm just trying to reconcile your debt to your balance sheet. And, Kim, I was wondering if you could just walk me through where everything is sitting on the balance sheet.
He's looking for it right now, Orest.
Yeah. None of it's hidden, Orest. I'm not quite sure the question.
Well, okay. My question is, you've got outstanding letters of credit, the 516.
All right.
And where exactly is that broken out? Is it just included in the long-term debt line?
No, the letters of credit themselves are just they're noted in the notes. They are not actual debt obligations that we put onto the balance sheet.
Okay, thank you.
And Orest, just to finish that up, what they are is, and again, I'll use a different phrase for you. They're like surety bonds that you post with different regulatory agencies, just sort of a financial support for your obligation to do something in the future.
Got it.
Reclamation obligations, those sort of
things. Liabilities are shown.
Yeah, the liabilities are included in the different aspects of, our asset, decommissioning and so on. But they are not anything more than that. You don't put it on your balance sheet until you've sort of completed the liability part of it.
Okay.
And this is a future, under what regulators do is, they'll go through and say, well, what, Cameco, that's your... we trust you today, but what happens at some point in the future if you're not there? We need some sort of financial assurance to cover that off, and that's what those represent.
Okay, got it. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you. The next question is from Edward Sterk from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks very much. Just a very quick question. Most of mine have actually already been answered, but with respect to the senior debt facility maybe up to $1 billion that you're thinking of putting in place. If that is put in place, would you then no longer have access to the current credit facilities, or would they still be available for short-term financing needs?
Well, Ed, there's three facilities. Direct answer to your question, it will be up to Cameco whether we would like to cancel any of those facilities. There is no lender requirement or anything like that we are facing that's mandating this. We will then make a decision once, we come to market with this, whether we want to keep those facilities available to us or terminate them and put them in place at a future date if needed.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Andy Hoffman from the Globe and Mail. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my question. I'm interested, you were talking about how active China has been in the spot market, and I believe a few months back you said that you were in talks with China concerning an output or supply agreement. Can you give us an update on that?
Well, we've done some business with China, and our discussions continue as regards longer-term arrangements.
Can you give us any sense of, in terms of you know, size of potential deals or how significant this would be for your business? And also, has China done any supply agreements with any other producers that you're aware of?
Well, the answer to your first question is we don't disclose information like that, and so I have no comment in respect of size or term. And then have they done agreements with other suppliers? Yes, they have, and they certainly are in discussions with many of the larger suppliers.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. The next question is from John Redstone from Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, gentlemen. One follow-up question regarding Cigar Lake. I wondered if you could just clarify for me the status of any contracts you may have for delivery of material from that operation. In other words, are you obliged to deliver material? And if so, what would be the source?
We have, John, we do have several contracts that are specific for Cigar Lake product, but under those contracts, you know, we had protection to the extent that Cigar Lake wasn't producing, and so those deliveries, now in this case, we've elected to move the deliveries way out in time to the end of the contracts, so we've just, you know, rolled them out.
Can you give me some idea of what time frame we're talking about?
Well, we, you know, these are rolled out quite a distance. These were very long-term contracts. So, I, you know, off the top of my head, I think it's well into, I'd say, the middle of the next decade.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from David Snow from Energy Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I came on a little late, so you may have already talked about this, but the increased costs of for purchasing uranium in the spot market, was that related to the principally to the increased sales that you had? You're increasing your expectations to 34 to 36 million pounds this year compared to previous expectation of 32 to 34, or was it also opportunistic? And in that regard, what is your feel for the overall uranium market price going out and from here?
Yeah, I'll answer the first part of that, David. And yeah, the you are correct. The higher costs are associated with this incremental material that we've purchased, that we first identified for you in quarter one, and we found more opportunities as we've moved into quarter two. So that is what those are related to. I will let George answer what he thinks for the rest of the year.
Well, in terms of the outlook for the spot price, you know, right now we're right in the midst of the summer doldrums, and so in the near term here, I think, you know, you could see price move either way. I think you could see further price weakness. Longer term, nothing has changed our view of the strong fundamentals of the market. So, you know, if you're looking out, you know, 6 to 12 months. You know, I think it's generally pretty firm and positive, so that's the way I would describe it.
Okay, thank you very much. Oh, and one more. Could you give us an update as to what your estimate of the production capacity for the industry was in million pounds a year last year and this year again?
Yes. Just let me check my numbers here. This year, I think we're forecasting, I have it here, we're forecasting 125 to 130 million pounds in terms of world production. And last year, we were at 114.
And then you also referenced the in the elimination of the Kazakhstan tax stabilization or the new tax code could be mature in the future. Is that one of those agreements that in the past held existing arrangements unalterable and now they can be altered? Is that what you're referring to?
That is what we're referring to, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Newcrest. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jerry. The new or amended agreement for MacArthur Key Production, I think it's 24.4
18.4 million pounds a year if you have a production shortfall below 18.7. And you can catch up from any production you've missed since 2003. What? How much catch-up room do you have?
I think around 5.2. Okay, Tim tells me about 5.2 million. So coming out of 2003, 2008. And so we have that flexibility, and it's something that we hope to take advantage of over time.
But you won't be able to do it in the next couple of years from what
you
said in the release.
You know, we're predicting 18.7. We'll certainly do our best to eke out a little bit more from time to time if we can.
And is this a first step towards giving you approval to move up to the 22 million pounds?
That's correct, Greg, yeah.
And any time frame on when you might be able to do that?
No, we still have to get through the... We still have to satisfy everybody on the moly-selenium issue and demonstrate that it's controlled, which we believe it is.
Okay.
And once that happens, then we'll move to the next stage, and, you know, it takes time to move through that next stage. So.
Okay. And just one final question, if I may, Kim, on this OPA agreement. So previous to this, you did not include the support payments in revenue. Is that correct?
Yeah, and Greg, the payments from the OPA were not included simply because we did not expect that we would keep them.
Right.
We thought the market would recover and they would be repaid, and therefore just don't report them.
And indeed, that's the way it
operated. That is how history has turned out through 2008.
So the $70 realized price you've reported for Q2,
right?
Does that include the $35 million that was carried over from Q1 as well?
The $70 does not include that.
Okay. So what were the support payments in Q2 then?
Well, year to date, there's support payments recognized in revenue 100% basis were $172 million. Quarter two by itself were $137 million.
And your share of that is the
31.6% or $54 million year to date.
Okay. Great. Gotcha. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. The next question is from Ivan Opolinski from Shields & Company. Please go ahead.
Very interested in your picking a very unusual technology for enrichment, i.e. laser enrichment versus the much touted and very effective gas centrifuge technology. I'm just want to get a little read on the efficiency of laser enrichment, and of course I assume it requires a very extensive plant construction. Could you fill us in this?
Ivan, we spent a number of years, a decade or longer, saying to everybody we wanted to be in the enrichment business and looking at the various technologies, talking with the various parties, and indeed we formally and informally had been part of a number of enrichment projects using the centrifuge technology. Finally, we teamed up on the laser enrichment with General Electric and Hitachi through GLE. You know, it's a feeling that, yeah, it's a breakthrough technology, and we have to always qualify to say that it is in the piloting stage, the test loop stage, and it's intended to demonstrate that ultimately it can be commercialized and be competitive. I think we all feel that if it works as anticipated, it will be quite competitive and will be there for the long, long term. But it is in that stage, and so we think from a capital and operating perspective, it will be quite good if it works.
Could I have a follow-up on that? Any estimates on construction costs and possible completion date?
Not at this stage.
Thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The next question is from David Snow from Energy Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi. That made me think of another question. Denial of the loan for USEC enrichment, how do you see that playing out across the uranium industry?
Well, I think that's still a fluid situation. We see that first there was a denial and now the extension, and the government is working with USEC. Beyond that, we're not in a position to really speculate about what's going to happen. I think that's all we can say.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.